Welcome to Radio Looks Illicit. I'm your host, Steve Matthews. Thanks for listening in today. Today is Friday, September the 2nd, 2016, and this is episode number 8, and this is the Week in Review. Well, there were a number of things, kind of a grab bag, really, this week that I wanted to review. I know we've talked some here recently about Pope Francis, some about the Roman Catholic Church. And there was another article that really jumped out at me this past week. This was actually from Breitbart News. And it has a headline, Pope Francis, Global Warming, quote, a sin. A man can atone by recycling and, quote, carpooling, end quote. Now, that's not really a terribly surprising thing. Of course, the Pope has been really pushing environmentalism very hard here ever since he's been in office. It goes back to, he made a big splash last summer in 2015 with a papal encyclical, Laudato Si. I believe was the name of it, and in there he does a push for sorts of globalist environmental standards. When he was over in the United States in September of 2015, he addressed the UN and also addressed the issue of climate change. And I believe he even talked, that was part of his address to Congress as well. So he's had a long history of doing this sort of thing. It's not particularly surprising or new. But he blames global warming on droughts, floods, fires, extreme weather events. He says the climate change is also contributing to a heart-rending refugee crisis. The world's poor, the least responsible for climate change, are most vulnerable and already suffering its impact, wrote the Pope. And he continues on in this way, and again, that's not terribly surprising he's saying these things. One of the things that you really have to keep in mind about this Pope, and really about any of the other popes, is whatever they happen to be pushing, they're pushing not for the good of the people that they claim to be addressing. They're really pushing for the good of the Church, the Roman Catholic Church. I mean, it's always about advancing the interests of the Church. It's not what's good for the people. It's not what is true or biblical, but it's about advancing what is good for the Church. And, of course, that fits in with the desire of the Roman Catholic Church for global government. We've talked some about that, how a number of popes, and this goes back quite some time, going back even to Vatican II back in the 60s all the way up until the present, popes and papal documents have consistently called for global governmental authority. And of course, they don't necessarily come right out and say this, but who do you suppose that they want sitting at the top of that authority? If you said they would want the popes and the Roman Catholic Church state to be there, well, then you can go to the head of the class, because that's exactly what they want to see. Their idea is to establish globally, once again, what they did on a regional basis in Europe during the Middle Ages. They want Christendom, and they want the Church in charge of that. Again, that's on a global basis. That's their goal, and they use whatever they can, whatever they feel that they need to get there. And if it's pushing something like climate change or global warming or whatever the latest buzzword they want to use, that's fine. They'll go ahead and do that. So again, it's not surprising to see the Pope coming out and talking about global warming being a sin. But it certainly is not surprising. It's fairly typical. I do get frustrated with it, I have to admit, every time I see these sorts of things. It's interesting, he goes on here and he talks about some of the things that can be done to avoid doing ecological harm. And one of those is avoiding the use of plastic and paper, reducing water consumption, separating refuse, cooking only what can reasonably be consumed, showing care for other living beings, using public transport or carpooling, planting trees, turning off unnecessary lights, and any number of other practices. Of course, you know, the thing is, the Pope talks about cooking only what is reasonable, or shutting off, turning off unnecessary lights. Apparently, I guess if you leave unnecessary lights on, that's sinful. Or if you cook more than what can be reasonably consumed, that's sinful in his eyes. But of course, the Pope never says what's reasonable and what's necessary or unnecessary. You know, the idea that your things are yours doesn't really occur to the Pope. He believes that he has the right to determine what's necessary and what's unnecessary, what's reasonable and unreasonable. And if you happen to violate that, you're sinning. And, of course, perhaps if a future pope is in the position to do so, they might actually legally come after you. Right now, the popes can't do that, but I rather suspect that they would be perfectly happy to do so. If they did have that ability, and perhaps one day again they will. And in fact, if we understand the read the book of Revelation, one day Rome will temporarily be successful in establishing a world government. That's what they're pushing now, and I believe that they will one day temporarily do that. Moving on to another story here. This is shifting gears quite a bit, but we're talking here about the U.S. presidential elections. Hillary Clinton made a statement this past week. There's a headline that I found here in Zero Hedge, and it says, Clinton unveils bold plan for pharma, drug price controls. Just reading the initial paragraph of this this particular article, it says, in yet another fit of populist rage, Hillary Clinton is set to unveil her fairness doctrine for the drug industry, as Reuters reports. Clinton will create, quote, an aggressive new set of enforcement tools, end quote, including the ability to levy fines and impose penalties on manufacturers when there has been a, quote, unjustified outlier price increase, end quote. All this has been prompted, and maybe you've seen some of this in the news. There was all this talk about this medical device called an EpiPen. It's something that's used by people with allergies, and they can inject themselves with epinephrine in the case they have a severe allergic reaction. And the price of these has gone up from being fairly cheap to, I think, something like over $600 in just the last several years. And of course, you know, Clinton wants to crack down on this because people have been, there's been an outcry about it, and by golly, she's going to do something about it. You know what this reminds me of? It's a little bit like this, reminds me a little bit of the old Dr. Seuss rhyme. I don't know if you ever remember that. There was a rhyme about the bee watcher. You know, and there's this town that has this bee, and apparently the bee is kind of on the lazy side. It's not doing a very good job doing this business of making honey or, you know, whatever else bees are supposed to do. It's not doing a very good job of it, and so they hire this guy. They decide, well, we need to have somebody watch that bee. If we hire a bee watcher, well, he's going to watch that bee, and that bee will work harder and get the job done. So they hire this bee watcher, and he watches the bee, and after some time goes by, the townspeople realize, well, you know, that bee really isn't working any harder than what he used to. Still pretty lazy, not much honey getting made, not much happening there. And they conclude, well, you know, that bee watcher we hired, he's not doing a very good job. And what we need to hire a bee watcher. Somebody to watch the original bee watcher, and of course the poem it progresses with a progressive absurdity. I mean, of course, you end up with the whole town watching, watching one another watch the bee watcher, who's watching the bee. Kind of an absurd situation, and that's a little bit what Hillary Clinton wants to do here. You know, Hillary Clinton, of course, pushed for national health care back in the 90s while she was first lady. Barack Obama is the one that put this into place. And really, you know, what you're seeing here is a case of a medical device skyrocketing in price because of government intervention. I've done some reading on this, and apparently the government's made it very difficult to get into the business of making these sorts of devices. You know, they grant these patents, they grant these exclusive contracts to companies to make these devices, and of course it allows them to corner the market. You know, but instead of coming out and saying something like, well, what we need is more free market, what we need is more liberty, what we need is to get the government out of the way, Hillary Clinton wants to create a whole new, what she calls an oversight panel to protect U.S. consumers from price hikes on life-saving drugs and important alternative treatments if necessary. You know, what we don't need is another bee watcher. You know, what we don't need is another government oversight panel interfering in the marketplace. What we need to do is get the government out of the marketplace, allow companies and individuals to trade and to do business. And I think that you would see a lot of these big problems disappear very quickly. But of course, in Hillary Clinton's world, government can never shrink. And of course, she's not the only person like that. You know, the solution is there always needs to be another law. You know, there ought to be a law. And this is the thing that gets me frustrated to no end, is every time there's a problem, someone says, there ought to be a law. There ought to be a new government agency. There ought to be, you know, X, Y, or Z, a new regulation, what have you. And they never stop to think that, you know, maybe it's just possible that some of these government regulations are the things that are causing the problem in the first place. And, you know, in tying this back to the Bible, yeah, we talk about we want to apply the doctrine of Scripture alone to government. Where does the Bible ever authorize government to be involved in health care? Well, I can tell you it doesn't anywhere. Where does the U.S. Constitution authorize the government to be involved in health care? Nowhere does it authorize such a thing. You know, the Apostle Paul talks about, in Romans 13, he talks about the government having two tasks. And one of those tasks is punishing evil doers, not evil speakers, not evil thinkers, but evil doers, people who practice evil, and also praising those who do what is good. Let me read you that passage here. This is out of Romans 13. Let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God. So government ministers, you can see, are from God. The civil magistrate, civil government, is a legitimate organization. It's not like the libertarians. You know, they've got a certain brand of libertarians out there. They call themselves anarcho-capitalists, and they believe that the government itself is evil. And that's not a Christian idea. The civil government is a punishment for and also a partial cure of sin. You know, mankind is in a fallen state. We're in a sinful state. And because of that, we require a civil government. But civil government doesn't have unlimited authority. Civil government is ministerial. It's not magisterial. Civil government does not derive its powers from itself. It doesn't even derive its powers from the consent of the people. Civil government is derives its powers from God. And because civil government derives its powers from God, God has a right to tell governors what they may and may not do. Their power is limited. It's delegated. It is not infinite. It is not original. It is delegated. So there's no authority except from God. And that's a pretty big deal. And the authorities that exist are appointed by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God, and those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Do you want to be unafraid of the authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. For he is God's minister to you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid. For he does not bear the sword in vain, for he is God's minister to avenge, an avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. So you have the idea of the civil authority being there to avenge those who practice evil. What's evil? You know, what are the sorts of things that civil government should punish? Well, what you have to do is you would have to look into the Old Testament and to see the things that were crimes there. And it's important to understand that simply because something is a sin, simply because something is wrong, doesn't mean that there ought to be a law against it. Not all sins are crimes. Jesus talks about, in the Sermon on the Mount, he talks about adultery, and he says that a man that looks at a woman to lust after her has committed a sin in his heart. But we don't throw people in jail for doing that. We don't fine them for doing that. There's no civil penalty that's attached to it. Now, that type of thing is sinful. Lusting with the eyes is sinful. But that's a sin of the heart. That's not somebody practicing evil in the sense that you go out and you kill someone or you steal somebody's car. Those are the sorts of things that are in view when Paul writes about someone practicing evil. So civil government punishes those who practice evil. Paul also talks about people who doing what is good have praise from the same. That is, the civil magistrate should pass laws that uphold the Ten Commandments and defend people who act according to those principles. That's the job of the civil government. Those two things. Setting up review panels to punish drug companies for charging what they think may be too much money. The job of the government is basically to be a referee, not a player. You know, if you want to use a sports analogy, you know, you've got two teams out there, two football teams out there in the field. You've got 11 players on one side, 11 on the other, and you've got some referees. But the referee's job is to make sure that the players play within the rules. It's not the referee's job to sack the quarterback. It's not the referee's job to rush the passer. It's not the referee's job to pick up a fumble and return it to the end zone. If a referee did that, we think that's pretty strange. Really, in the government, their job is to be a referee. Their job is not to tell companies how much they should charge for a product. Their job is to ensure that people uphold their contracts and that's really about it. And yet we have this idea that government should do pretty much everything, including regulate prices, and that is the sort of thing that exists in Soviet style government, a totalitarian government, not in limited government, not in a system of constitutional capitalism. And so once again, I mean, Hillary is simply just showing her socialist stripes. I've talked quite a bit, both on my blog and also in some of the other podcasts that I've done, about the really poor state of the economy. there's that comment that Barack Obama made at his State of the Union speech earlier this year in 2016, and he said that, you know, that if you don't think, well, I'm paraphrasing here, but if you don't think that everything's just awesome, that the economy is just doing great and everything's wonderful, well, you're peddling fiction, is what Obama said. He said, you're peddling fiction. You know, you're lying. You know that everything really is great, and you, darn it, you better believe me. Well, there's tons of evidence out there that says everything is not awesome. In fact, just about nothing is awesome. I mean, I guess you've got the stock market at an all-time high. I guess maybe that's pretty awesome, at least for some people. You've got the bond market at an all-time high. I guess that's pretty awesome for some people. But you've got a lot of other things that are really pretty horrible. There was an article that I saw here recently that said the U.S. factory orders tumble. This is a headline. It says U.S. factory orders tumble for the longest streak in history. 22 months, U.S. factory orders have declined year over year every month since October 2014. This is the longest period of decline in U.S. history since 1956. Apparently, 1956 is when that data series occurred or began. So that's 60 years. That's a pretty good sampling. But it's the longest period of decline in U.S. history and has always indicated, the U.S. economy is in recession. They were constantly told by Barack Obama and the Federal Reserve and some of the cheerleaders on Wall Street and the Wall Street Journal and some of these other folks that everything's just great. Everything's awesome. Everything's wonderful. And yet here we have the longest decline in factory orders, almost two straight years. This goes back to October of 2014. Where there's a year-over-year decline. And what that means is, say, the factory orders, U.S. factory orders for July 2016 were lower than they were for July 2015. And the numbers for July 2015 were lower than the numbers for July, 2014. Well, it doesn't go back to July 2014, but you get the point. You take a look at July 2016, they were lower than July 2015. If you look at August of 2016, they would be lower than August of 2015. And so it's this continual down for U.S. factory orders. And of course, that's a bellwether. That's a big tell. And that's consistent with a lot of other important economic numbers. For instance, I believe in July it was reported that Caterpillar, which is one of the real bellwethers of the economy, had reported 43 straight months of declining revenues. So, 43 months, that's about 3.5 years. So, I mean, that's going back to, the first part of 2013. For Caterpillar, and Caterpillar is considered by many people to be the stock to watch on the stock market. And it's kind of easy to understand why. Of course, if you know Caterpillar, that's a U.S.-based company. They make heavy construction equipment, things like bulldozers and track hoes and this type of thing that are used for construction. When the economy is going well, you're going to have construction and Caterpillar is going to be doing well. They're going to be shipping a lot of equipment. And when the economy is doing badly, of course, Caterpillar is not going to do badly because there's not a lot of stuff being built. And this is the longest straight year-over-year decline, monthly revenue decline in the nation, in Caterpillar's history. And so then you can couple that with the largest decline in factory orders, or the longest decline in factory orders in U.S. history. Those are two pretty big tells. There's another thing that came out here today. I saw this is on CNS News, and the headline says, government workers now outnumber manufacturing workers by 9,932,000. Now stop and think about that. Government employees in the United States outnumber manufacturing employees by almost 10 million. The state of Ohio, I think the population is, 10, 11 million, something like that. Basically, that's like the entire population of the state of Ohio. I live in Ohio, so I know about that. That's why I mentioned that. Ohio's a pretty good-sized state. I think 10 million people, that's roughly the size of what New York metropolitan area. Maybe they're 12 million, something like that. But that's a lot of people. And so you have government growing and growing and growing. And that's another bad sign. There was one of the Trinity Foundation lectures. I know John Robbins did this in one of their lecture series on economics. It's called, The Growth of Government in the United States. And he referred to it as one of maybe the greatest tragedy of the 20th century. if I recall. It's been a while since I listened to that lecture, but if memory serves me correctly, I think he called it the greatest tragedy of America in the 20th century, is the growth of government. Because when government grows, freedom shrinks. When government grows, your taxes grow up. That means you keep less for yourself and you have to give more away to the government. When government grows, regulations grow, laws multiply. Think about all of the freedoms that we've lost in this country over the past 100 years, and it's really astonishing. And so, this is not a good trend. This trend is not our friend. The idea that we have more people working for the government, living off of taxpayer revenue, than we have people in manufacturing actually creating that revenue. That does not speak well for the future of this country. Government does not produce anything. What government does is take government is a net loss economically. Now, it's necessary. As we said, the government's ordained by God. So that much is true. But government is limited. And if the United States, if we obeyed the Constitution, principles in the Constitution, if we obeyed the principles that are set forth in the Bible about what is the proper sphere, what's the proper scope of government, you would never see a statistic like that. And that does not bode well, again, for the future of the country. So that really about wraps things up here for this week. There's more I could go on and on about, but I'm trying not to make these podcasts too long, so hopefully this will be a little bit shorter than some of the previous weeks. I want to thank you very much for listening in today. And remember again, that as Christians, that there's nothing that can separate us from the love of God. Nothing. And sometimes it can be easy, at least for me, to forget that, and maybe I'm not the only one. We live in some difficult, frustrating times. I know I get frustrated. But I also know this, that God is in charge. He always has been. He always will be. There's not one thing that takes place. Not even one little thing. Not only apart from his knowledge, but apart from his bringing it about. And we know, as Christians, that his eternal plan, the decrees of God, those are for the good of his people, all of them. And all of them will work out that way. And so when you read the news, just keep that in mind. And Lord willing, we'll talk again next week. Thanks very much for listening in. And I wish you all a very good weekend.